about ideas that matter, and we make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, your host, and today we're going to be doing a little then and now and looking forward connection. 10 years ago, December 2014, as a matter of fact, Liz Winstead joined the conversation, and again today I have the privilege of having her join us on our show. Back in December of 2014, Liz came on the show and made the connection between health and humor, and we explored how humor as speaking our truth. And we talked to Liz about Live Free or Die, her new book, her memoir that was out.
That book is called Liz Free or Die? I just want to not leave.
Oh, I had Liz, but maybe I didn't pronounce it as well as I should. Liz Free or Die, her new memoir that was out. Lady Parts Justice was also one of our conversations. And I went back to our notes for the show and I smiled and I saw that I had labeled them Liz Winstead, our Twin Cities treasure. Welcome, Liz. And we do treasure you, and you are a force of nature.
Wow, thanks.
So you've got a documentary out. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, my work doing reproductive health rights and justice advocacy. A documentary film crew had seen what we were doing from the beginning of the work and approached us and said, we really want to follow what you do because times are feeling very hopeless. It was like right at the end of 2016. There was an election that wasn't going so well and didn't go so well for many. And we were on the ground trying to give people actions and activities, foreshadowing what could happen to abortion access with an administration that was fervently hostile towards it. So we were trying to preempt for folks through our actions, through going on the road, helping independent providers, and helping the abortion funds and helping everybody in the movement be able to participate in ways that maybe people hadn't before. You know, we kind of been given the marching orders, march. And then what do we do? I think I wanted to fill that what do we do void so that anybody with their abilities and anybody with the time that they have, if you don't have money, there's other stuff you can do. So that's what we do. And the documentary crew felt like, that is really good information. It's really interesting. You use humor. You actually use, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And we want to be able to capture that. So they've been following us around for 7 years. And the documentary started doing the festival circuit in late 2023. And so right now it's floating around and doing all kinds of festivals all around the country. And I'm super excited that it's making its big Midwest premiere at the Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival on April 20th.
And it's going to be on April 21st as well, 6 o'clock on April 20th and April 21st at 2 o'clock.
That's right. And a big after party. So if you go to either showing, we're having a big fundraiser for Abortion Access Front. So you can learn more about the work, have a dance party, you know, celebrate all the folks, celebrate the film, and have a lot of fun. DJ Tricky Mickey, there's auctions. We're going to be giving, you have a chance to bid on doing a karaoke duet with some of the Twin Cities most wonderful musicians and also luminaries who you might not know can sing. So it's going to be a really fun total like event of watching the film and then celebrating the work in person afterwards, and gives you a chance to really deep dive with me, my team. We're all going to be there.
And to get tickets, I'm going to give the website. It's noneaskedyou.com and then /screenings. And you can buy your
tickets. I think that you might want to get the tickets, if I could.
For sure.
Want to get the tickets at the Twin Cities International Film Festival website. And that is MSPIFF. I can't remember if it's .com or .org. But if you go there and you click on either screening, it will give you the opportunity to buy a ticket for just the film or a ticket for the film and the fundraiser.
Now, when you said you went around the country, essentially, right? Going into small towns, challenging the status quo. This was even before Roe versus Wade was turned over, right?
Yeah, we part of the sort of core mission of what we do at Abortion Access Front is way before Roe was overturned, I became an advocate because I realized that what happens in these states is what's profoundly going to affect all of us, no matter where we live. For those that don't know, you know, Roe v. Wade fell because of a law out of Mississippi. And so if we're not paying attention to what's happening in states and motivating activists in those states, we are going to end up having some state you might not live in decide what happens for your reproductive health. And so what we do is we travel around the country to the hardest hit states and the states with the most regulations and the most bans and the most oppression. And we work with, we do comedy and music shows. And within those shows, we also feature an interview and a conversation with the independent abortion providers who live in those communities and the activists who are currently working on the ground, so that our audience who's come to the show can also have a rich experience of learning what's at stake in their community and then how they can help. And those organizations have tables set up right in the show so people can sign up while they're there. And the other cool thing that we do while we're there is a lot of folks don't realize that if you are a clinic that provides abortion care in a community, a lot of times you can't get somebody to mow your lawn, fix your fence, fix your roof, paint your clinic, things that any other small business wouldn't have a problem getting. But if somebody works with those clinics, a lot of times they'll be boycotted in their community. There'll be pickets outside of their establishments. And so we go in and do some of that work at those clinics. So we've done gardens, we've painted fences, we've done shredding for people, we've fixed, done all kinds of improvements for them. And then we tell our audiences at the shows, hey, this clinic is having trouble getting a XYZ, who wants to be the person that will be that them. And I'll never forget being in Oklahoma City and this guy raises his hand and he said, you know, I have a landscape company. Are you telling me that activism means I do the lawn work for this clinic, they pay me, and that's activism? And I said, yeah, having your van that says the name of your company parked out in front of that clinic shows that you support them being in the community and gives the clinic a feeling of that they belong and that people in the community like what they do. And then you have a sense of helping and also getting a new client. It's a win-win for everybody.
I have to believe that there's been great change after you've been in that area that has allowed that to happen. And
yeah, it's been incredible. In fact, we have had the super good fortune to have somebody do their PhD thesis on whether or not this strategy works. And so she followed us around for 2.5 years and did surveys with the clinics, with the people who came to the shows, to sort of seeing who was interested, who signed up, and then who followed up. And the astounding thing in her research was that about 30% of the people who came to the shows actually signed up and then followed up. And that's a really great statistic in trying to make change in these ways. And so it's been very effective, especially when you're in a place where it can seem very dour. It can seem super like overwhelmingly negative. Mm-hmm. To have people bringing levity and joy and just to gather people together who are really feeling afraid and feeling like, I don't know what to do. I have marched, but that doesn't help me continue in mm-hmm. trying to be part of the solution. They know that they can sign up with Abortion Access Front at our website, which is aafront.org, and they can sign up to volunteer. And our team helps you fill out a questionnaire, and then we'll talk to you one-on-one to really find out, like, what is your capability? How much time do you actually have to give? What are the parts that concern you the most? And they can help put you to work in the community you live. And that is what is really essential. It's not just going out, doing it, and leaving. It's then helping maintain for folks who were there and maybe didn't have a chance to do it, like be reconnecting to say, I'm now ready. What can I do? And that's really great.
Maintaining the connection.
Yep.
Have you worked with any clinics that have had to shut down because of all the craziness?
I've worked with several clinics. In fact, I'm on the board of Whole Women's Health Alliance, which is in about 7 states around the country, and they have a clinic here. And they were also the people that have been fighting at the several times at the Supreme Court against some of these laws. Its CEO and owner, Amy Hagstrom Miller, is a Stillwater gal. And so she's had clinics close in Texas. She's had clinics close in Indiana. And she's also, you know, a safe haven state here in Minnesota. I think a lot of folks don't realize with the closing of so many clinics, Whole Women's Health in the past 2 years, 30% of the patients they see are from Texas, you know? And so when you think about what that means that there are that many barriers to find a clinic that's available between Texas and Minnesota. And of the few states that are providing care between Texas and Minnesota, the waiting period to get in for care is so long that people are driving these kind of distances. And it's heartbreaking.
In part of it, it feels good that we're a North Star state that can pull not only from our immediate region, but as far as Texas. I also have to believe that it makes a difference that, you know, VP Harris came here and chose Minnesota to be the place to make her statement. How did you feel about that?
I mean, I'm always happy when there's attention from politicians. I still think that there's a lot of work to do around how we speak about reproductive health and abortion access specifically. I think that there's still a lot of stigmatizing language around it. And the fact of the matter is, people need abortions for many, many reasons. And if we don't talk about that and say the word, I have to tell you that as somebody who's had an abortion and somebody who advocates and works with the providers, they feel their hearts break and they feel like they are unsupported. And they feel like even when there is support, if there isn't an affirmation of the work they do, they feel as though they are looked upon as doing some kind of dirty work, or they don't feel centered and they don't feel supported. And that's something that really needs to change. And I really hope that politicians will start speaking with advocates, storytellers, providers, because it has been mostly citizens who have led these ballot initiatives to secure abortion in their states. And the polls are showing overwhelmingly that people who have kept their stories to themselves or have thought that it was their own private matter, have realized that while it is indeed your own private matter, if you don't speak up to say everyone deserves access to this so they can move on with their lives, then we stay siloed and we stay silenced. And so as these citizen-led ballot initiatives are coming forward and people are speaking up and telling politicians and working like they've never before, some of these people have never been activists before, and saying, this is what we want, and you as politicians have been literally harming us. The politicians who are pro-choice and want to advocate to expand access need to take cues from them, because there's stories to tell. And oftentimes I think politicians, they speak in sort of political horse races around issues that are very personal. How does this affect the Democrats? How will this affect the Republicans? And it's really, how will this affect humanity? Mm-hmm. And I think politicians need to be speaking about it in those terms so that they feel like authentic advocates and become authentic advocates.
And with that, we need to take a break, but I want to come back and I want to continue the conversation about what's happening in the states, what's happening with politicians, what difference can we make, and also make sure that everyone knows about how to come to your the documentary that was done about you and a little bit about the filmmakers who made that happen. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Connected Radio Show, where we talk about ideas that matter. And we make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, your host, and we are honored to have Lynn. Why do I keep doing that? I think it's because it's Liz Winstead with us, who is an extraordinary comedian, thinker, someone who is making a difference in the world today. And we so appreciate you being here, Liz.
Thank you. And also Minnesota, you know, I'm a Minnesotan.
Yeah, born and bred here.
Yep.
Well, you've been part of Nobody Asked You, a documentary, and a little write-up that they have on the Nobody Asked You is comedian, disruptor extraordinaire Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, and her team, Abortion Access Front, crisscrossed the U.S. to support abortion clinic staff and bust stigma. Pop culture icons and next-gen comics fuel this seven-year road trip film, activating small-town folks to support clinics, expose wrongdoer politicians, domestic terrorists, and media neglect as the race to the bottom ensues. In our last segment, we had a chance to talk about what it means to support those clinics, and we started to talk about exposing the wrongdoer politicians. Tell us more about that.
You know, I think it's important for folks to understand who's crafting the laws and the kind of people who are getting elected to do so. You know, sometimes we see the federal people, but we don't see the people who are elected to statewide office. And some of them are part of virulently anti-abortion groups that have been tied to clinic bombings, that have been tied to January 6th, that have been tied to anti-LGBTQ and anti-immigrant things, you know. And so for us to be able to showcase, we have a website that's called Hypocrites Unmasked that we also, that Abortion Access Front runs, that gives a little bit of like detail as to the different kinds of anti-abortion extremists there are, because they have a different tactics. They come from different swaths. And it's important to learn where they are and regionally who you should be looking for in your area. And for us, it's as important to do that as it is to do everything else, because it all intersects. And so one of the interesting things about us being out on the road for so many years is we were able to, you know, create great relationships with the advocates and the activists who are on the ground. And we spend 4 or 5 days in each one of these towns. And so as we started talking to them about what it was like escorting patients, what it was like being targeted at city council meetings, you know, who are these people that are, you know, the forces against, you know, abortion access. And they started telling us these stories very in-depthly about where they lived, what these people's names were. And as we would travel around, sometimes like a person in Mississippi would mention somebody in Alabama as being like their person from there. And it was like, well, they said that person's from there too. So we discovered that these people are traveling around the country to harass clinics. But more importantly, we started to ask, are you documenting this? And does anyone have a database? And is anyone following these people? And they were they're so busy, and they're volunteers, and they weren't. So we started documenting these stories and the names of these people, putting them in a database. And we have then followed up on that by joining their churches, joining their clubs, and tracking when they say they're going to be someplace, when they say they're going to show up at a clinic. And through that, we created the largest anti-abortion extremist database in the country.
Wow.
And two, by assigning our volunteers and our team members to track certain organizations and people, we started seeing rumblings about 3 months before January 6th of people wanting to go to the insurrection. And so we started following closely these people making mention of it, these group organizations making mention of it. So in the morning of January 6th, and even actually on January 5th, when they said we're going to be in DC, we started capturing when they would go live on Facebook or live on Instagram. We started capturing and taking their footage and taking their photos and capturing their posts. And at the end of the day on January 6th, we had reported to the FBI 30 anti-abortion extremists who were at the Capitol. And then in turn, same when they go to the clinics and they chain themselves to the clinics, it's a federal violation. You can't go and prevent somebody from getting health care. The penalty is 10 years in jail, a massive fine. And obviously you're banned for ever being in front of a clinic. And through our data and our videotaping and research, we've helped get about 11 convictions of people who have been involved in this behavior. So that's just a happy accident from just having conversations and trying to get people organized.
But it turned into a forensic almost.
Yes, you know? It turned into a forensic. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a forensic that was just being handed to you. You know, if you're just having a conversation with somebody and they're giving you a whole bunch of information, like, let's just take that down. Let's get that in a spreadsheet. Let's share that spreadsheet with people. You know, let's start filling it up. And then being able to have clinics and activists say, does anybody know this person? They look familiar and take a picture. And then we can say, oh yeah, that's, you know, John Doe. And John Doe is actually on probation and should not be in front of a clinic. And so John Doe's about to get in trouble, you know?
And we're all happy that John
Doe. We're all happy that John Doe, you know,
he's getting his
hole behind right there, you know, not understanding the law.
And you share about how they're hurting the clinics, but my guess is that you've been under some threat as well. My guess is that your team has had some challenges. Is that true? And how have you coped with that?
I mean, I think there's a lot of challenges, you know, that there's like obvious challenges of having enough bodies and people, which requires, you know, resources. You know, there's never enough money. Nobody wants to fund any of this because we still live in a society that hasn't decided to fully support
destigmatize and be able to
expand, you know, access to this care, right? And so that's one. The other thing is with so many social justice battles that we're fighting, you know, the people who are in the fight are the people who these things are happening to. And so helping people with morale, helping people with safety, you know, making sure that people know that they always have permission to dip out when it feels overwhelming. Because, you know, I am 60 years old and I am no longer of reproductive age, but I have way more privilege than I ever have, way more free time than I have ever had, and the expertise. And so, you know, it's important for me to help highlight and platform all these incredible young people doing it, but also to make sure that I'm fully embracing and allowing them to take a break when they need, vocalize what's making them feel scared or harmed. And, you know, for my own self, you know, making sure that people don't know where I live, making sure that my address has been scrubbed from the internet. You know, I'm going to do a screening for the documentary in Milwaukee on April 13th, and I'm going to rent a car, not drive my own car, because I don't want my license plate out there in the world if protesters come to the screening. You know, that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking about. And then if you're a doctor or an advocate out there in the world, you know, physicians at these clinics can't drive home the same way twice because they're terrified their license plates will be tagged. These virulent organizations that we're trying to expose will print out wanted posters and then plaster a physician's neighborhood and all their neighbors to say, you know, Nancy Smith at 123, you know, Rose Avenue, murders babies for a living. Here's her phone number. Here's where she works. Here's the name of her children and the school they go to. And so their children are followed to school with these people screaming, your mom kills babies. Like, it's really, really intense.
When I hear you share that, I think in terms of, you know, there's the one level of access and making that destigmatized and important for all of us to be able to access. But then I hear protection. You know, how are you protecting individuals for their long term, as well as healing? How is the healing process as part of claiming the right and claiming the right for yourself and for others?
I think the healing process for us is just, you know, making sure that if we ask people to do this work, to be really transparent about the kind of toll it can take on you when you're taking in a lot of information that feels terrible, or you're doing research on people that feel scary, that you should take a break, and that we have tools for you to like chill out, to de-escalate, and all of that stuff. You know, that's the other thing too, is if it makes you so angry, maybe, you know, volunteering to escort clinics might not be your wheelhouse, because you may just want to scream at these men that are out there, and you just, and it's hard to ignore them because they are saying horrible things, you know? And so it's like checking in with yourself, because it's really okay that if you're like, cause I'm that way, I don't do a lot of escorting, cause I would be a detriment outside of the clinic sometimes, you know? And so, you know, there's other ways to do, you know, that, but I think that's important. I think protection, there's organizations that do security work and security monitoring. You know, we just do a little part of it, but there's major organizations that do that. One of the things that's been really hard for clinics is that oftentimes in certain cities, law enforcement is in bed with the anti-abortion extremists. And there's been incidents where a protester has violated the clinic, has literally trespassed, has literally done things that are terrible, and law enforcement has been called, and they either don't show up or they'll show up and join the protest. I've been at a clinic where they've shown up and brought water and prayed in their uniforms with the people who are out there harassing the patients and harming the clinic. So that's also feels really scary. Like when law enforcement seems a lot of times to not be doing their jobs and seems to be in cahoots with the extremists in certain communities, you know, what do you do then? You know, how do you protect yourself then?
And being able to encourage the your voice in front of law enforcement, be able to say, yes, my voice is important. And what I believe is important. And I'm being shown and told that it's not. I'm being shown and told that what my voice wants to offer is not acceptable.
And it's also true, protecting the people of color who are part of your community, who have not had experiences with law enforcement that have felt like they are equals or anything. You know, that's where we can really come into play. I know that my experience with law enforcement is going to be different than somebody who is black or brown, you know? And so I can be louder. And when we do go out on protests and I have been arrested, you know, we have a whole plan of like white folks in the front and anyone of color, depending on how the hostility of the cops go, you know, take a step back. You don't need to put your body on the line when you don't know what the outcome is going to be for this. Others are here to do that for you and on your behalf. And so those are the kind of things that we think about a lot.
And your organization is very dedicated to multicultural and all voices.
Yeah, we definitely are. You know, it's super important that we are always amplifying and advocating for the people who are most affected by all of these bans. It's important that our leadership is women of color. It's important that we just have voices also of, it's not just women who have abortions, you know, trans men have abortions, people who are non-binary have abortions. So also making sure that we're centering all the communities that might access reproductive care, because bodily autonomy matters for everybody and it touches all of our lives.
I do want to make sure that folks know about Nobody Asked You coming to the Twin Cities, and the dates and times, April 20th and the 21st. 6 o'clock on the 20th and 2 o'clock on the 21st. This is part of the Twin Cities International Film Fest. And what's the best way to get those tickets?
The best way to get those tickets is to go to the film festival's website, which is MSPIFF, Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival, .com or .org. I can't remember. And then if you type in No One Asked You, you'll see. And also there's opportunity to come to the fundraiser after party celebration dance party that will celebrate the work of Abortion Access Front. So you could see the film and then actually immediately do some activism right after. Or you could come to the party and then go to the film the next day. And it's at 2 o'clock. So you could have some drinks, sleep in, go to the film. We were thinking about these things.
It sounds wonderful. And our next segment, I'd like to have us talk even more about what are some specific things, besides having a great party and going to a great documentary that followed you around for 7 years. What else are some things to do? Because you mentioned earlier, you need folks and you need their support. And there's a variety of ways that I think we can encourage them to do that, as well as, you know, what are the scary things that are happening right now in a lot of different states that need your support. So we'll be right back. Stay with us with the amazing Liz Winstead and her insights. Where we talk about ideas that matter and we make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, your host, and today we have had Liz Winstead sharing with us about the Abortion Access Front that she has founded. It was founded in 2015 under the name Lady Parts Justice League. Abortion Access Front is a team of comedians, activists, writers, and producers that uses humor to destigmatize abortion and expose extremists. Anti-choice forces working to destroy access to our reproductive rights in all 50 states. Thank you for all that you do, Liz.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So when we talk about being active, I loved in the first segment you shared how a landscaper could consider himself an activist. You need people to help you. You've mentioned in the second segment, there's never enough resources. Help us know what are things we can do? Because that's something I also feel very deeply about with the Connections Radio Show. Now that we've made the connection, what do we do about it?
That's right. So I think what's cool is what we realized, and the reason that I really founded this organization was that there was so much to do. And the reason that I even founded it was I finished my book in 2012. And when I drove back to New York, I wanted to do something. I had my two dogs in a van and I drove around the country visiting clinics all over the country and doing fundraisers. And nobody was looking out for the clinics. They're about their mental health. Are you getting what you need? What kind of assault are you under? And so I was like, this is a void that I can fill, looking out for the clinics, helping grow community and helping sustain their staff so that they feel supported and loved and take some of the burden off them. Because for a long time, clinics were providing the care, having to correct all the misinformation and having to file the lawsuits. And it's like, we need to take some of that burden off of them so that they can be the caregivers that they should be giving, right? So that can be everything. So when you say, what can you do? The first thing I say is assess A, what you like to do, what are you good at, and how much time do you have, right? Are you somebody who likes to bake? Did you become a COVID baker? You could commit to making cupcakes or cookies for your local clinic 4 times a year as a thank you for them existing so that the staff says, oh my God, someone from the community sees us and wanted to do a small thing. You could write postcards to clinics around the country. We have a postcard program called Thank Bank. And what we do is if you want to send postcards, you can't send letters because mail is scary at clinics. If you have to open it, you don't know what's in it because they receive terrible things in the mail. So if you get a bunch of postcards with your friends, get together, have some wine and just thank them. We'll help you do that. We'll even send you the postage. If you want to have a postcard writing party, you know, just letting clinics know that you care about them. Are you good at accounting? You know, are you like, oh, you know what? I'm good with spreadsheets and helping people balance their books. There's many abortion funds around the country that are all volunteer that when they get donations come in, they need somebody to help them like organize that. That's something you could do. There's a scourge of religiously funded anti-abortion clinics that pose as abortion clinics out there in the world who have advertising and messaging that sounds like they'll help you if you're looking to seek care. But if you go there, they'll shame you about wanting to have an abortion. They might lie to you about how far along you are in their pregnancy, and they're not run by physicians. So we have a program called Expose Fake Clinics where you can help write Google reviews and tell somebody who's searching for care in their community. You know, if you have a review, you don't have to be nasty. You can just say, this clinic does not provide abortion care if that's what you're looking for. And it helps somebody who might not know better see that and move on and not be subjected maybe to their propaganda and their stigmatizing things. Let's say you are somebody who, you know, you kind of want to get up in the mix. You know, you might want to show up at the state capitol. We have opportunities to Join us in Washington, D.C. when we go and protest when the Supreme Court happens. We also have statewide opportunities to, either go thank the politicians who have been forward in protecting and expanding access to reproductive care. And also, if you want to get a little spicy, going in and telling the anti-abortion politicians what you think in a fun and creative way. We train people how to do that. We'll walk people through it. Those kind of things. Of course, you can donate. Always donate. If you don't have any other thing if you feel like, that's what you want to do is put your money towards it, please feel free. You can donate to Abortion Access Front at aafront.org/donate. There is a myriad of ways. And if I haven't listed something that interests you, if you hit up us on our volunteer site, our people who create these programs will literally talk to you and find out what is it that you want to do, how much can you help, and help guide you. The other thing that is a really comprehensive thing is we created a sort of training how to figure out where it is you might want to find yourself called Operation Save Abortion. And if you go to operationsaveabortion.com, you'll see we have 5 different videos that are 45 minutes long, and they're really great conversations with experts in abortion provision, like running abortion funds, helping doing travel and lodging support for people, taking to the streets direct action, and policy and advocacy. And what we've been encouraging people to do, and we've had about 20,000 people come through this program, is get some friends together and make a commitment to maybe once a week or once every other week, watch a video. There's a toolkit that goes with the video, so it spurs conversation. It gives you some of the tools that what it would be like to participate in that particular activity. And then it gives you some next steps on how to think about that particular piece of advocacy. What Operation Save Abortion does is, if you were to watch all the videos, you could see what we're doing, all the ways you can get active. And then you can either say, ooh, that's the one for me. That's where I want to go. But then you can also recommend to your friend to say, oh, you might like this one. And that really, and then you go through that, and then we'll connect you to your local places on it's choose your own adventure, really. And the adventure that you choose, we can hook you up with where you are locally and what people need. So there's a lot of things to do.
So choose your adventure and be an ambassador.
Yes. Choose your adventure and be an ambassador. Those things are really, really great, especially if you're an organized person. And maybe you're like, gosh, it seems like, Liz, you do so much stuff that's like front facing, or I'm not really a performer, or I'm not a person who would, wants to confront these absolute horrible people. That's awesome. People who can organize those that want to, people who can support those that want to, people who can feed those that want to. Like, it's so crucial to be part of a team and figuring out what your skill set is in making it happen.
Well, it strikes me as a great segue to how we got reconnected was you going out to D.C.
Yes, we ran into each other at the airport.
At the airport, and you were getting ready to go to the Supreme Court. How did that go?
So it went very well. For those that don't know, in late March, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments about whether or not the abortion medication mifepristone should remain accessible as it is today. It is safer than Viagra. It's safer than Tylenol. It's been on the market since 2000. Over 6 million people have used it, and with 28 fatalities. That's a really good record for a drug, for sure. The anti-abortion people who brought the suit have said that it's dangerous and it was rushed to market, and they just said a whole bunch of stuff. So the good news is even the conservative justices didn't seem to buy the argument from anti-abortion doctors that they have been forced to treat patients or provide abortions.
In an emergency, they might have to.
Yes, they might have to. But even then, there is a federal clause that's a conscience clause that if you just simply state, I do not want to participate anything to do with abortion, they will make sure there is a physician or a medical person on staff that can step in for a person. So no one's ever forced to do it. And the justices knew that, and there was a lot of shenanigans. So what we did was, and the other thing is, they're also saying that they want to roll back being able to send medication abortion through the mail through telemedicine because of an 1873 law on the books called the Comstock Act, where this puritanical crusader in the 1800s decided he was going to collect all the porn and all of the herbs people were getting through the mail to have abortions and all of the vibrators people were using for nefarious vibrations. And he literally collected them and then went to Washington, D.C. and said, look what's being sent through the mail. It's a moral outrage. And Congress said, you're right. We're going to ban it and put this law on the books. And this law has been on the books ever since. And so these people are saying, well, this law is on the books, so you shouldn't be able to send things through the mail that are abortion related. And so we did two things while we were there. We created these massive magazine posters that were magazine covers that sort of listed all of the six conservative justices and sort of told the story of their legacy. And they were wildly popular. If you just Google, you'll see the magazines because they were in every single piece of media. And then we created a character that is Anthony Comstock, the author of this horrible bill. And we had
And you can see him on your Facebook.
Yes. And you can see him running around all over the place, asking women why they're out. How did their husbands let them out? Who let them wear pants? And then he talks about the law. And so what was really interesting was there was a whole bunch of anti-abortion extremists out there with big giant signs saying, revive the Comstock Act, enforce the Comstock Act. And so, and then they would list that, yes. So but they didn't say it was from 1873. And so you have Anthony Comstock showing up saying, I wrote that bill in 1873. I'm so excited you're supporting it. And so then we got on camera the leader of this organization promoting it saying, hey, when this guy comes by, hide your signs. And it's like, oh, so you're not really proud of taking women back to 1873? Got it. Or you don't want people to know that's your plan. So it was very effective. And we're going to be, we have a campaign to try to repeal the Comstock Act. And Tina Smith is leading that charge on a federal level, which is amazing. And so Anthony Comstock is going to be showing up all over the place. And it's going to be just a really fun way to educate people and let people know, like, 1873 is coming for you, y'all.
Well, it was a sheer delight and pleasure to be able to connect with you in on our way to DC. And it was my way of giving back as well to support you in having you on the show and be able
I really appreciate it. And it was really good to sort of frame the documentary and then to be able to say, hey, Minnesota, if this all seems confusing and I said a lot of words, this documentary really shows you visually what we do and how you can plug yourself in. And it's been a really great tool in all of these stops along the way for people to really say, oh my gosh, I can see myself as an activist for the first time in my life.
Well, we've got 30 seconds. Be sure to share with us how to see this amazing documentary.
All right. The amazing documentary is at the Minneapolis St. Paul Film Festival, April 20th and 21st. Tickets are at mspiff.com. And you can go there, click on either one, and then come to the fundraiser dance party to also support the work. It's going to be a great time. I'll be there talking also.
And you'll be inspired to do so much more.
Indeed.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you so much, Lori.